Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I would have been perfectly happy talking about microwaving eggs for a little bit longer. But for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, I'm John. I'm the guy doing the talking of which you don't understand. And today on the Damage Report, we have a very important episode with Brett Ehrlich. Brett, host of the Happy Half Hour, how's it going?
It's going so well, John. Let me get as big as you. Hey, so essentially on the Happy Half Hour this week, you're going to love it. It's me and Mark Thompson. And we talk about the stories that TYT's main show, I want to say is afraid to cover, but I should probably say has better judgment than to cover.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Things that were explicitly rejected because they're not newsworthy or have journalistic integrity. Mark Thompson pours the biggest glass.
Below us.
Yes, they're right at our level. We are the kids at the dinner table who are underneath the table having a fort, and everyone else is eating like a human being. We are, while everyone else is shopping dutifully at the Gap, we are going and disappearing into the racks of clothes. You know what I mean?
I used to love that. You never know the last time you hide in a rack of clothes. You don't know that's the last time that you did that. But anyway, okay, so that's mostly what we're going to be talking about today, racks of clothes. Now we're going to be talking about the debate, a debate that can be summed up by a tweet I just saw that said, I feel like Trump gets all of his facts from the websites that give your computer a virus, which I think is probably true. So we're going to talk about Fox Brain today on the program, as well as a number of other things. Obviously, last night was the last debate of the 2020 presidential election, possibly the last debate of America. We'll see. We're going to be giving you updates, though, also on Rudy Giuliani. We've now seen the tape. Mitch McConnell and his health. We're gonna give him a once over, you know, from tail to tippy top of shell, and see how he's doing health wise. And then we will of course be rolling out our garbage people of the week, which we're always very excited to end the week with. That said, for those of you who are already here potentially and watching the show, please share the stream. And you know, if you want to do that, you can like it, follow us, sub us, bongo. I don't know what you can do on what platform you're on. You're gonna have to figure that out. But there's buttons. Start pressing them.
Bongo?
Yeah, that's, you don't know, is it a thing? It could be.
I don't know anymore. I do want to say a special little public service announcement. There is not a common room today. So if you want to pour love upon the Twitch stream that I'm on, this would be the one. But there is a special thing happening tonight. They're streaming Gasland with Josh Fox. Nice. He's going to do a watch along with you. So that is exciting. So no common room. Yes, Gasland. Gasland is a euphemism for common room, but the actual Gasland will play tonight.
That is true. That is true. You want to know something? So we've done, you know, we do watch parties on our Twitch, movies every once in a while. Is that still happening? I don't know if that's still happening.
Maybe. Yes, why not?
But anyway, I kind of thought, does anyone, and I want to see in the Twitch chat and the YouTube chat, does anyone find this remotely interesting? I thought it would be kind of interesting to do a live watching and reaction to one of the 2020 debates between George W. and Al Gore, just to see how much has changed and how much perspective we now have on the things that were being discussed and the things that weren't. I think that could be kind of interesting. I feel sure. Like maybe doing that eventually. But anyway, there's so much to get to, and I know what
the
I know
the uncomfortably the close pace, to John. Here's the 2020 debate, the 2008. Ew, John. Oh wait.
Anyway.
Wait. Do that again.
You You want,
do that again. Go the other way. No, go the other way. And hang on. Don't anyone do anything. Go back a little bit. It's one head. Crazy.
Okay, you know, we used to wear ties on the show. And we talked about the deficit and stuff. Everything is a waking dream. Anyway,
Brett, I'm in charge of changing how many days it is until the election on the lower thirds. And I just want it to be zero so badly.
You do. It's coming. Brett, do you know what just happened? That thing that we just did of our skulls connecting, that you interrupted me saying, I know the pace we moved through the show on Friday to do that, thus demonstrating the concept. Anyway, we're gonna talk about the news because I'm worried the debate is gonna take us 40 minutes to get through because there's so much to talk about. Brett, I want you to bear this in mind. If we don't have time to cover Mitch McConnell's hand, we're not covering it. So just bear that in mind. And I know you want to talk about his hand.
Man's hand. We are the homie.
Okay, everybody, let's do this. Let's talk debate. There were quite a few standout moments from last night's debate. The best were when the mute button worked, but it was all too rare. Others though, we're gonna start to go through. And the first I thought was an amazing moment where Joe Biden points out that Donald Trump famously said he takes no responsibility for COVID. You know, that pandemic that's still going on, we're gonna be talking about it later. And here is how Donald Trump decided to finesse that earlier answer.
Excuse me, I take full responsibility. It's not my fault that it came here, it's China's fault.
I mean, that's just amazing. Like, I take no responsibility, that is peak Trump. I take full responsibility, it's not my fault. That's all that we've gotten. 220,000 US deaths has gotten him to briefly pretend to take responsibility before immediately saying that it's not in fact his fault.
Yes, it's like when someone says, I am so sorry that you misinterpreted what I said. Like, you did say sorry, but that's not the point of how normal people say sorry. The point is to express some kind of contrition when you have failed someone. And when you say, I take responsibility, he knows he gets in trouble for saying he doesn't take responsibility. Finally, that's gotten through to him. So he thinks the big pivot, his big moment, and it's so ironic in a time when he tries to go after Biden for pivoting during a debate toward kitchen table issues. Trump got mad at Biden for that. But for Trump to then think that he has really nailed it by saying, I take full responsibility, it's not my fault. That is the height of stupidity. Yeah,
exactly, and it's a height that has Trump, he's just sitting up there screaming down his little whiny comments to us because he continues to attempt to effectively avoid responsibility for the things he continues to say by constantly referring back to a thing that he sort of misstates that Dr. Fauci said. So, and by the way, we're gonna play this video for you, but the thing that bothers me the most, I don't know if everyone watching this felt the same. He says the exact same things all the time. Same intonation, same pace, the same exact stupid, whiny, responsibility avoiding points. And here is one having to do with Dr. Fauci and what he was saying in the early days of the pandemic.
He did say, don't wear masks. He did say, as you know, this is not going to be a problem. I think he's a Democrat, but that's okay. He said, this is not going to be a problem. We are not gonna have a problem at all. When Joe says that I said, Anthony Fauci said, and others, and many others, and I'm not knocking him a lot, nobody knew. Look, nobody knew what this thing was. Nobody knew where it was coming from, what it was. We've learned a lot. But Anthony said, don't wear masks, now he wants to wear masks. Anthony also said, if you look back, exact words, here's his exact words. This is no problem, this is gonna go away soon. So he's allowed to make mistakes. He happens to be a good person.
Okay, none of that makes sense. Yeah, none of that makes sense. It's not really what Fauci said. Fauci said very early on, everybody shouldn't rush out and buy N95 masks. And he says now, whether this is accurate or not, he says the reason he said that was that he was worried of shortages. There were in fact shortages, so whether he's being honest or not, it was a wise thing in theory to worry about. But the fundamental issue with this is, Trump saying Dr. Fauci got it wrong 8 months ago is not an excuse for him to continue to get it wrong today and tomorrow and the next week and the next month. And he really does think that it is. He thinks you can't criticize me for being wrong right now as I'm speaking about masks, because the guy you like was wrong about it more than half a year ago. But he's a whiny little greasy weasel, and so he thinks that that does absolve him of his current responsibility, but it doesn't.
It is such an underachiever's mindset that he just he just thinks by getting one thing right ever, he is the expert on it, because he doesn't want to actually succeed. He wants to be perceived as succeeding. He wants to do the least amount possible where he feels comfortable claiming credit for a win. Now, what has panned out in many polls, especially specifically about handling the coronavirus, is thank God Americans aren't buying it. Like in polls, by massive margins, people think that Biden is better on handling the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And Trump, it's specifically for things like this. Things like you saying Anthony Fauci, who is known to be an expert, and he says he's a Democrat, but he's worked under Republicans and Democrats under their administrations. Those are people who do have credibility. It's proven that they have credibility. Now, Trump, instead of just doing the things credible people would do, would rather not work, not change, not admit that there is better work to be done by changing, and then instead blame Fauci and do this pathetic grasp at Fox News hosts to try to further this narrative that he thinks is just an easier way to go about it, which is attacking Fauci and hoping that Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, and Sean Hannity will follow suit. And it's proven that that approach does change how people view reality. Because, and there was a poll recently that came out, and he used the same strategy. He's using currently the same strategy on mail-in voting. And wouldn't you know it, a majority of Fox viewers, which is disproportionate when it comes to comparing that to other people who watch other outlets, Fox viewers believe that there is impropriety in mail-in voting because that's exactly Trump's approach.
Exactly. And on top of everything that you just said, he still doesn't get or just can't make the switch over to understanding that if he were to actually take it seriously and do even a piss poor job on the pandemic, it would benefit him politically. You know, forgetting obviously that it would be the moral thing to do, it would actually save lives. It would benefit him too. And Fox News would pivot. That, like, if he suddenly was taking it super seriously, Laura Ingraham would start to pretend to take it super seriously. That would not be that difficult, but he's not going to do it.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Now, there were a lot of other issues that came up at last night's debate. The topic of immigration certainly took up a bit of time. And Biden and Donald Trump had a back and forth about the family separation. Obviously, big news once again with the revelation that over 500 kids still haven't been able to be reunited with their families. The expectation is that many or most or all never will be reunited. And so Donald Trump again did his thing where he starts whining and complaining at both sides and pretending that somehow this is actually a bigger problem for Joe Biden. And so here is Joe Biden talking about the current problem of family separation.
These 500 plus kids came with parents. They separated them at the border to make it a disincentive to come to begin with. Bay, real tough, we're really strong. And guess what? They cannot, it's not coyotes didn't bring them over, their parents were with them. They got separated from their parents, and it makes us a laughing stock and violates every notion of who we are as a nation.
So, yeah, because Trump, when asked about this, kept saying they're brought by criminals, they're brought by racists, they're brought by coyotes. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about you and Stephen Miller telling ICE, the Border Patrol, all of that, specifically to take families that are whole units and tear them apart. That's what you did. This isn't about random unaccompanied kids. That is its own set of problems. We're talking about you making the choice, the purposeful, by design, cruel choice to separate families that are together when they come in, to send a signal to countries, you know, that potentially people might come into our country from, that it's just not worth the trouble, that it's too scary, too dangerous. That's what you did. And Biden, I thought, there were a number of times where I thought Biden's responses weren't strong enough, but I thought that that was a pointing out how awful that policy has been. I thought was one of the good points.
It's crazy. Like, imagine that scene in The Godfather, Godfather 2, where Michael appears in America. They come to shore, and he's there with his parents at the border, and then someone just pulls them apart and sends them completely different places. Like, what they don't understand is, like, we as a nation have romanticized the immigration experiences of every other kind of refugee except this one. And it's utterly race driven and it is utterly racist. And then Trump's response in the debate was, actually, they're pretty clean, these cages. That's his response. That's him saying, I want, yes, I am taking families apart. And there's still over 500 parents who don't know where their kids are, can't be reunited, have been lost. Those are real human lives. And you know, Biden's part of the Obama administration. So they sent a lot of people home. And and I would argue that they sent too many people home. But all Biden's saying is, like, at least we didn't tear families apart. It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's absolutely nuts. And Trump thinks it's a win because his cages are clean.
Well, the way that he talked about it, for some smooth brained people, I think it's enough both sidesing that it's a get out of thinking free card. And by the way, as you just said, if you want to criticize the Obama administration's immigration policy, I think that is one of the most ripe areas for criticism. But that doesn't mean that any random criticism actually makes sense or is true. And the stuff that Donald Trump was saying just doesn't make sense. He kept saying, it's not a problem that I was forcibly separating families and putting kids in cages. Who made the cages? Who made the cages? Now, that is a shred of truth, as the best lies and deceptions do. Many of these sorts of facilities were set up under the Obama administration. It's a little bit more difficult to say that Biden specifically is responsible for that, but he was part of that administration. That's fine, that's fair. What you do need to understand, though, is that there was a drastic uptick in people crossing the border at a very specific point in time that was not anticipated, thus creating these facilities in the short term. Now, thankfully, courts stepped in and said, you can't hold people in these sorts of conditions, so they stopped doing it, okay? Now, any family, even temporarily being separated or being kept whole in cages like that, is 100% unacceptable and shouldn't be allowed. But creating sort of emergency housing that you then would log people and then allow them to go out and come back to be processed is very different than saying, I want you to rip babies out of their mother's arms specifically to send a message that we are a cruel country that you don't want to come into. It's just not the same. And it doesn't make sense, by the way. Even if it was true, even if Biden was, like, saying under the Obama administration, I want these kids in cages, let's say that's true. You've been president for years now. Why didn't you shut him down? What's the point of you saying who built the cages if you staffed the cages? It's just such a stupid both sidesing. It's just kicking up dirt. That's all it is, which was honestly what a big portion of this debate, I think, was about a number of issues. The idea that people come in, you register them, you give them a date that they're going to be processed in terms of administration and a judge. And then you allow them to go out rather than holding them for indefinite periods of time. That is effectively how it was. Trump doesn't like that. He ended at, here's how he talks about his problems with that prior policy.
Only the really, I hate to say this, but those with the lowest IQ, they might come back.
Okay, President Trump, let's give Vice President Biden a chance to respond, and then we're going to move on to the next section.
You don't know the law, Joe.
Vice President Biden, your response.
Yeah, so, and he said 1% come back. I don't know how I'm supposed to argue because that is simply not true. Depending on what particular stat you look at, it's at least 75%. In some areas, supposedly, it's like 97%. He can make he can mock their brains or whatever. He thinks that that's a ripe thing. Like all those people coming across have got to be more stupid than me. That's just how he views different groups of people. But it's not 1%. It's not 5%. It's not 10%. It is the vast, vast majority. No matter who you talk to.
Yeah, it's just so stupid. You wonder when, with Trump, there's so many bad parts of his thought process and arguments. You don't know what to engage with first.
Yeah.
But in this situation, he just called everyone who follows the law an idiot.
Yep.
Right? That's his argument. His argument, the law and order president, the law and order president's argument is that if you follow the law, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Right?
He just called, and it's easy.
People who left ganglands that we created essentially, flee those areas to come here for a chance at survival, to claim asylum in a way that's widely accepted legally to do so. And then if they follow the law after that, so they're idiots. That's it. So he called, if you follow the law, you're an idiot. If you break the law, you're his champion, I guess. You're a smart champion. And this is, and it doesn't hold with all the other arguments that he makes about Antifa, these lawless bastards. So then you're just, this fake idea of Antifa you've come up with is actually behavior you're advocating for. Because only an idiot would follow the law. You said it yourself. Yeah. I don't know how people follow this and say that he makes any sense ever.
Well, I think part of it also is it's very easy for the people that statement is targeted to believe that these people are going to continue to break the law because they fundamentally think that these are the sorts of people that aren't like me. They're just criminals. They just look for every opportunity to break the law. And it's just not true. They're not criminals, okay? They're people fleeing horrific situations that virtually no one in Trump's base can imagine trying to survive in for 6 hours. They're trying to come to a place where they will have a better life, and more importantly, their kids will have a better life. That's it. I know it's easy to imagine that they're just inhuman monsters. It turns out they're actually just like us in a lot of ways. They just want opportunities, and they make our country stronger when they get in here. Anyway, let's talk about one other sort of.
They also obey the law more than we do.
Exactly. Statistically, yeah, as we've said many times. Another standout moment from the debate last night was Donald Trump being asked about race, a topic that he's had some issues with in the past. Perhaps we'll go over a little bit of that. Here is his assurance, though, that should not be a concern for you about him at all.
The first time I ever heard of Black Lives Matter, they were chanting pigs in a blanket, talking about police. Pigs, talking about our police. Pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. I said, that's a horrible thing. And they were marching down the street. And that was my first glimpse of Black Lives Matter. I thought it was a terrible thing. As far as my relationships with all people, I think I have great relationships with all people. I am the least racist person in this
room. Okay, I hate that cut off. He was saying I'm the least racist person in this room. I don't know for sure, the room's too dark, but I think I'm the least racist person. He's literally talking to a black, I believe, black and Native American debate moderator, and he's saying that he's the least racist person, the person who pushed for decades for the exonerated five to get the death penalty. The guy, I mean, look through his Twitter history. history, obviously. The problems with the investigations of differential rates of rent and things like that. I mean, come on, there's no room he goes into where he's the least racist person, honestly. Well, we know the sorts of people he hires, maybe.
That's the truth. But it's like, well, if you pack the room right, John, he might be the least racist person in that room.
Mm-hmm.
He is. His policies are racist. He is attacking he's attacking any attempt to teach about like the legacy of slavery in America. That's racist. His housing policies when he was a real estate developer, racist, explicitly racist. I just don't know any. I mean, my big fear right now is that I hope that everyone understands and knows. Every decent human being understands and knows what kind of a person they're dealing with now. And those feelings I had as he was trying really hard to push his same old tired narratives that worked in 2016 with a handful of people. Hopefully those same people are looking at him being like, oh my God, I was had. The same way that everyone that has lived in Hollywood and worked in Hollywood like knows this kind of guy. Like Seth MacFarlane said it right when it was happening. He's like, I have dealt with people like this who talk themselves out nonstop and there's no there. They're just a huckster and a BS artist that have gone through their entire life snowing people. And eventually, like in New York, everyone caught on to it. He's done in New York, which he referred to during the debate as like, my beautiful New York, my beautiful New York. No, the Trump era New York was something like everyone on every side of the New York crime and fixing it debate that has anything to do with Trump's approach to it knows what a disaster it has been and is made into. And it's just very frustrating.
It is. And in terms of like that, the guy where there's no there, like he makes it, I would assume, even easier to know that than most hucksters, because he has this thing, and I have already referenced one, where he just says the same thing in the exact same way. So when you ask him about BLM, you don't need to wonder what he's gonna say. You know exactly what he's gonna say. The first time I ever heard BLM, it was pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, and it was horrible. He said that over and over and over and over again in interviews and rallies and all of that. He says the exact same thing. It's a script. That is why, by the way, no one has any excuse for not destroying him in a debate, because you literally know what every one of his answers is going to be. And the obvious follow-up to that is, what does that have to do with the movement Black Lives Matter, which incorporates literally millions of people over years across the entirety of the country? You have one chant from like 3.5 years ago that you had a problem with, okay? Do you think every group that you support should be judged by one particular chant at one location in one state chapter literally years ago? No, obviously you don't. So talk to me instead about what they're pushing for rather than just telling us about this chant over and over and over again. And we know if you ask him about why, you know, for instance, a lot of Black Americans aren't supporting the election, you know exactly what he's gonna say. I've done more for Black Americans than any president in history, with the possible exception of Abraham Lincoln, because he said it over and over and over and over again. He's not a thinking human being. He's not inhabiting the now and responding to your concerns. He's just like Kayleigh McEnany's got the binder, but he's doing the script just as much, as if he was flipping through and then finding the line he's supposed to say based on the label. BLM, oh, fry him like bacon. Why don't Black Americans support me? More than anybody, except perhaps Lincoln. That's all it is. It's so pointless. And that's why I just don't think that he's going to be able to win over new voters. He hasn't had a new thing in years at this point.
So those lines are tested within an inch of their life. Previously, they had been tested in like, Frank Luntz would sit there and be like, all right, here are the 5 things we were thinking of saying to undecided voters. What do you like the best? And then it gets tested and then everyone repeats them. That was when you paid someone to do it. Trump, as I said, in 2015, 2016, he is a truffle pig that just sniffs out these kinds of things that work from a marketing perspective. And he also has no shame. So he has no shame about blowing right through the obvious, anything that would mortify anyone else to say these kinds of words. You wouldn't be able to get through it with a straight face. Yeah. But he also has no shame. He doesn't have, his radar doesn't pick that up. So he just goes right through it because he always has. And so he is that focus group. And if it works on him to convince him that his ideas are right, then he thinks it'll work on other people. And it has. Like, a lot of people only have enough attention span to lend to politics so that they can go until they find something that makes them feel good about how they already think about something. And yeah. There's tons of valid reasons to support Black Lives Matter, whether you're talking about the organization or just what those words mean when said in a row. But a lot of folks who are benefiting from the system as is are like, God, please give me anything to not have to worry about this stuff. And that's what Trump gives them. And it's worked for so far. And so now they don't have to engage and now they can move on with their lives. But I agree. I think by now most people, like, there was a focus group from CNN last night of undecided voters, and literally not one of them thought that Trump won. Oh.
We've got it. We're gonna talk about the results. Don't even worry. Really fast, I wanna give you credit. While I know your favorite theory of your own is the justice butthole, I think your truffle pig theory is better, because it does explain a lot of politicians. It unfortunately, I think, explains a lot of people in media as well. Their talent is in sniffing out a thing that people will think is tasty, and then just serving that up over and over again. And Trump definitely does that. I disagree about how good his nose is. Because I like, obviously, it gets you through a Republican primary, but hypothetically, that truffle should be able to win you a national election. I don't think he's necessarily found it.
I mean, he won a national election with it.
I understand that.
That's how he beat the entire Republican.
I don't doubt he found the exact right truffle for the Republican primary. And then I think he was given a big assist by Hillary Clinton. I think that Joe Biden is effectively just a blank candidate that doesn't provide that advantage to him, and he's coming up short. The topic of climate, energy, all of that also came up. Donald Trump, obviously an expert on alternative energy. Here he is talking about wind.
We are energy independent for the first time. We don't need all of these countries that we had to fight war over because we needed their energy. We are energy independent. I know more about wind than you do. It's extremely expensive, kills all the birds. It's very intermittent. It's got a lot of problems, and they happen to make the windmills in both Germany and China. And the fumes coming up, if you're a believer in carbon emission, the fumes coming up to make these massive windmills is more than anything that we're talking about with natural gas, which is very clean. One other thing.
Find me a scientist who said that.
I love solar, but solar doesn't quite have it yet. It's not powerful yet to really run our big, beautiful factories that we need to compete with the world. So it's all a pipe dream. But you know what we'll do? We're gonna have the greatest economy in the world. But if you want to—
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Great. Like, at that point, there's so many moments during the debate where Welker was like, all right, we're moving on. Like, that was a nonsense thing. You've done your thing and we're moving on.
Yeah, like, no, I've suffered through this enough. Can we just seriously, no, you're gonna talk more? Okay, great. Yeah, by the way, really fast, I thought she did a better job than all of the previous moderators. He still was able to trample a little bit, but I thought she did a much better job. Anyway, look, the stuff about him knowing wind better and it kills all the birds. And I thought, you know what? I haven't seen birds in years. He has a point. No, that's not actually true. And let's once again go through the fact check. Here is what actually kills birds. This is bad news for cat lovers. Oh, I'm jumping ahead. I apologize to the director. We'll go back to the other stuff. But here's for the wind turbines. No, wind turbines do kill a good number of birds, but cats are just engaged in all out apocalyptic war on birds. I don't know how they do it. But anyway, no, wind turbines are not a significant killer of birds, you big idiot.
And solar is not super expensive.
I know, it's actually like,
Jesus,
if you stop to think about it, it's actually so awful. That's each year.
Evil. You know, though, if you're a bird and you get killed by a cat when you yourself can fly, it's kind of your fault.
It's kind of on you. What, like, if you're being killed by buildings, come on, man, they're not even moving. 2.4 billion a year?
That's so many.
We need to do something about this. What is up with cats, by the way?
So stupid.
And how many cats are killed by birds? I feel like this is asymmetric warfare. Anyway, we're getting off the point. So that was obviously stupid and it's too expensive. Yeah, that's why we want to invest more in it. And his perception of that is entirely off, is incredibly cost effective. Wind is very cheap, solar is very cheap, but whatever, we're not going to convince him of that. But then he went on about how Biden is enthralled to AOC plus three, demonstrating his Fox brain, because you're watching this. If I just say AOC plus three, do you know what that means? Do you know why you should care? Do you know why it's supposed to be clever, or why that's supposed to be a thing that triggers you to support him more? No, you probably don't, because you're a sane person who doesn't watch Laura Ingraham. It's some random thing that Laura Ingraham thought was clever. So rather than saying the squad, she says AOC plus three. And Trump has Fox brain. He thinks everybody knows these same super inside baseball things. So I just say it as if it's clever. It's not clever. Nobody knows what you're talking about. It's like making some sort of oblique reference to like a comedy that came out in the 80s that was never in theaters. Nobody knows what you're talking about, you big idiot. But he says it. And in response to him invoking AOC, AOC tweeted, "If someone told me 3 years ago while I was waitressing to help my family stay afloat that in a few short years an unhinged president of the United States would be repeatedly saying my name at the 2020 debate, I would have brought them some water and told them to sober up." She also said, actually, it's AOC plus 115, because a lot of people signed on to the Green New Deal. She also said, "If we've been identified as public enemy number one to the worst president in modern history and an entire party of his sycophants, then we must be doing something right," which is 100%. Right, and he started talking about the windows again. What a moron, Jesus.
So I would disagree. Yes, all the other stuff you said is right. I disagree, and it's not that I disagree. It's just I want to point out like a very important dynamic specifically about what you're saying. So it is possible that, and I can't say with great certainty, but it is possible that it's a social media world, and essentially what social media does is create a bubble around you. Right? And what the Republicans have been much better at since Cambridge Analytica than Democrats is to essentially identify and feed propaganda and terms directly to a base that they find electorally beneficial to them to secure. And I don't know how well they've done this, but it is possible, I think, that they have found this group, and one of the things that they feed them is terms, specifically like AOC plus three. And they do that every day, multiple times a day, and grow that base where they would have been isolated. And you're right, maybe 10 years ago, when you do drop a term on someone like that, they would have no idea, because previously the only way to get the news was either through CNN, even Fox News.
We're not. Brad, I don't think that we're talking about the exact same thing. I'm not saying that his base doesn't know what AOC plus three is necessarily. I don't think a ton of his base necessarily does, because we have to remember that while Laura Ingraham has a fairly large audience, it's still a very tiny fraction of the American population, even of red hat wearers who know any of that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you randomly, because you have Fox brain, start talking about AOC plus three during a nationally televised debate, people who are not already in your base don't know what you're talking about, and they have no idea why this is a thing you're saying or why they should support you based on it. And when it's AOC plus three and 18 angry Democrats and Russia, Russia, Russia and the laptop from hell and Bruce Orr and all this stuff, they have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm not, I understand the focus groups and I understand framing and I understand all of that. I don't think that a random term that Laura Ingraham comes up with is necessarily as electorally useful as a Frank Luntz, you know, like death tax or something like that. But even if it was for his base, he's trailing. He doesn't need his base. He has his base. He needs other people, and those people don't watch Laura Ingraham.
This is how those, yes, I agree with that specifically in this specific debate. I thought you were talking about like generally more like more stuff like this will happen. It will continue to happen. They'll try really hard. They'll pick up and learn from this and synthesize what they learn about base growth versus reaching out to folks in the middle. But I, AOC plus three saying that on the national stage, I think already there is a group of people there's a smaller group of people watching this who are in that category of like the moderates who are just kind of figuring out what to watch now. Like, I don't think the second debate is much different from the first debate. I think there is a larger group of folks, but I still think it's a self-selecting group of more like, engaged people.
I get why using death tax is intended to make you think about something in a particular way that benefits a particular group. I get that. I don't know what AOC
Dragon
plus three
Squad. Dragon is Squad, intended. Right? What is Dragon Squad for? I love Dragon Squad. Dragon Squad mm-hmm. is to say, here are words we use that they don't, that we understand, that they don't get. And
I get it. Coded language, I get it, that you have these terms or whatever. What does AOC plus three rather than the squad, what does it make them think about AOC in a different way? Is it intended to say that the three aren't worthy of having their names listed? What is the point of that?
It's to bring
up. Why is that
algebra,
a thing that she said more scary. Than once? It is algebra is scary. That's it's true.
I feel like we're
just don't
now,
get but, it. And there's.
But it's part of. It's all part of the same strategy and playbook. Mm-hmm. Which is yes, there's death packs, there's AOC plus three, they're all different levels of membership, but already like pushing this stuff forward first and foremost is not all of these like attempts at branding the other side as evil through coded language are equally as successful as each other, but used more often and together, it is at least a strategy, one that the Democrats definitely don't use as much. And that's all I'm just pointing out is, and that's why I said at the very beginning, it's like, it's just something to pay attention to and helps you understand why he's doing it and how he's doing it. And I think it's all these things together make it more successful than it has any right to be.
We will see, we will see. Supposedly AOC is, she tweeted asking for designs for an AOC plus me shirt, which I think is gonna be much more successful. I don't know exactly what everyone is going to take away from this debate, but I did think that Joe Biden had one particular point that I think is obviously what he wants people to think about this debate and this election, the lens through which he wants them to think about it. And I think that they already are. So let's take a look at this Joe Biden video and see if Brett agrees with me.
You know who I am. You know who he is. You know his character. You know my character. You know our reputations for honor and telling the truth. I am anxious to have this race. I am anxious to see this take place. I am, the character of the country is on the ballot. Our character is on the ballot. Look at us closely.
Let me ask some follow-up.
Excuse me.
Please respond, and then we're going to have follow-up.
If this
stuff
is true about Russia, Ukraine, China, other countries, Iraq, if this is true, then he's a corrupt politician.
Right.
So don't give me the stuff about how you're this innocent baby.
Okay, innocent baby, Jesus.
He missed the way silver he talks bells
about babies
line.
And dogs. Exactly, the whole thing's weird. And look, much of the debate was he knows that he's got all of these issues, so it's just kicking up Hunter Biden laptop stuff or whatever. But the point about, you know my character, you know his character, you know my reputation for honesty, which again, we've criticized him for things that we thought were lies before. But nobody other than a red hat wearer doesn't get that there is a difference. And I think it comes through in the election. I think that as a form of a closing statement, I think it's pretty effective. And I think that the national polls that we're seeing, I think already reflect that, yes, people do get it. The framing of Hillary Clinton as, you know, crooked Hillary or whatever, they're still trying to do that. He was trying to do it last night. It's not as successful, it's just not. There's a number of reasons for that. But I think that that's sort of how people are already viewing the choice.
Yeah, the empathy of, the ability for empathy that Biden obviously has, is so much further than, is so much more developed than Hillary Clinton's. He's a higher communication politician. All those things that people were waiting for to happen during a debate never happened. Those moments where we were afraid he would have similar moments to what happened in the primary debates, where he would say, oh no, you go ahead, I'm done talking, whatever. None of those meltdowns happened in any of the debates.
That's true.
And also he's a white guy. And I think that might just, as I said that months ago, I think that might just be enough for the folks who hated Hillary on the margins not to hate her anymore. What's sad is in the meantime, with Trump having been the president of the United States, a lot of the Trump type people have said, oh wow, we can have the power explicitly and not just dog whistling stuff. Like, I think that's the biggest downside. And has undone a lot of the work of the last, you know, 60, 70 years of civil rights fighting. That's really sad. But I do think that this works. And I do think people in that moment had to have seen Biden's character And Trump is just kicking up dust, as you said.
Yeah, yeah. And we're gonna, in a couple of minutes, we're gonna turn to a little bit more. We gotta talk about COVID, but then we're gonna talk about who we think won. The topic of the pandemic came up because we're in a pandemic, people. It should obviously be talked about, the debate. How is that not a bigger topic of discussion? It's still here, it hasn't gone away. But anyway, they did talk about it. And here is Trump once again reassuring you that it's almost gone.
If in fact, at Social Security, if in fact he continues to withhold his plan to withhold the tax on Social Security will be bankrupt in by 2023 with no way to make up for it. This is the guy who's tried to cut Medicare. So I mean, the idea that Donald Trump is lecturing me on Social Security and Medicare, come on.
Yeah, there was some sort of miscommunication there. But anyway, look, he went on during the debate talking about it'll soon be gone again. We're rounding the corner. He keeps saying this. He's talking about how many goggles we've made, I guess. And look, Biden did a good job of pointing out this is the guy that said it'd be gone by Easter. This is the guy who said the cases will be down to zero. This is the guy who said it'll be gone by the summer. And yet it's not looking like that's the case. The US set a record Thursday as the number of new coronavirus cases rose to over 77,000, topping the previous record in July. Nationwide, we had 77,640 new cases. The daily tally comes as the total number of coronavirus cases of the country has reached nearly 8.5 million with over 224,000 deaths. There were 921 deaths reported just yesterday. Right near 1,000 again and again and again and again, day after day, months of 1,000 roughly people dying every day. It was horrific the first time it happened 7 months ago, and it should be just as horrific with every day that we reach that mark. And he says it'll soon be gone. Take a look at the chart. This is cases. You remember that second wave after the 4th of July? Yeah, we're about to hit that same peak again. When you look at the news, when you talk to people, does it feel like we are? I feel like people really have moved on. Certainly Trump is long gone. He doesn't care at all about what those numbers mean or how deaths are certainly gonna rise again as they did during the second part of the first wave. But yeah, we're entering right into the third part, right?
Yeah, it's very frustrating. He doesn't want any responsibility to take any responsibility for this. He, instead of fixing it, he wants you to basically pretend like it's not a problem. That is horrible. That is so horrible. And that is giving up, and that is defeatist, or that's defeated, and that is losing, and that is not American. Americans fight. We fight for stuff. We fight to win. He is giving up and he is losing to a virus. Yep. And every step of the way, he has bungled it. Slow the testing down. And someone retweeted the moment that even in the debate, Kristen Welker says Trump says he was kidding during it. Like, you have to say that. No, I rewatched that moment where he said, let's get some UV light in people's veins. Let's inject bleach as a way of cleaning. He was not kidding. This is the same guy that has that says we really need the voice of the demon semen doctor. This is Trump, who now is attacking Anthony Fauci, who is an expert. And his attack line on Biden is Biden will listen to scientists. It's not that hard, man. And something you're not losing by going along with someone who knows more than you. Is that what he thinks it is? Is his ego really that fragile that if he says, let's do what scientists are saying, or at least factoring it into our behavior? It's ridiculous. Yeah. No, he has decided that he would rather have a high stock market by hinting that there's gonna be a bailout, which isn't even his responsibility. People have faith that Wall Street has faith that after this, Pelosi and Trump will finally come around on some kind of, and McConnell will come around on some kind of stimulus because they have to. They think they'll be fine, but he thinks that he has to make some kind of economic and poorly framed civil rights argument against coronavirus, which is killing people left and right. I think one of the strongest moments of the debate last night was when Biden said, no, people aren't learning to live with it, they're learning to die with it.
Yeah, that was a great line. And I will just say again something I've said, I don't know, 35 times on the show since it happened. When Trump said the bleach thing and the UV light thing, their defense was he was just kidding. And as I will say, as horrendous and scary and deeply disturbing it is that the president could be so stupid and have such little knowledge of science or medicine that he could say it seriously, it is objectively worse after tens of thousands of Americans have died for him to joke about injecting bleach. Anybody watching this has lost a friend or a family member, I'm sure feels the same way. It's not funny. It's not funny at all. We have debates about when something is too soon. I would argue when we were halfway through the current death count, too soon probably, when people are dying. People are dying as he was saying that. It's not funny. It's not funny. I'm not a professional comedian or anything, but not really funny.
But he also, he wants you to think that he's an expert, and he still during the debate was saying things like, oh, I think we've got some fixes for this. I think it hurts people this way and that way. No one's ever seen it. Like at this point,
yeah,
those moments, and there are a lot of moments that I think, you know, even the underdeveloped people who don't pay a lot of attention to politics pick up when Trump vaguely describes something sort of about the law. There were moments where Biden says, no, here's a fact about the law he's talking about, and then explains the law and the terms. That's someone I want who has some working knowledge of any of this. And
of Trump's been anything.
Not working, and he doesn't have knowledge.
Yeah, and he likes to say that he learned a lot from having had coronavirus, but I believe that honestly, whatever he had learned was taken out of his brain as his brain swelled from the fever. Yeah, he falsely claimed antibody treatment is a cure. He falsely claimed that he's now immune. He falsely claimed that kids aren't transmitting the disease to teachers. He misled about the timeline for a vaccine. He falsely claimed that the spikes in Florida, Texas, and Arizona are gone. He lied and he lied and he lied and he lied and he lied. That's what he did. That was the president in his last bid to convince an incredibly skeptical public that does not like, fundamentally doesn't trust him on this pandemic. That is how he tried to win their support once again. And I am fairly confident that it was a failure. We had our debate last night. And since this is the last debate we're gonna have, it's the last big scheduled thing in the election. Obviously stuff can happen. The question was, who won and will it matter? Will this actually shake up the race? And almost immediately I thought, oh my God, it might. Because I saw Charlie Kirk, he tweeted the first instant poll shows 97% think Trump won. Now, yes, he did say that immediately after the first debate, and it turned out to be totally true. So totally untrue. So I'm sure he's being more careful this time. And it was buttressed though with Donald Trump tweeting out this, who won? Trump was at 96%. That might have been the poll Charlie Kirk was talking about. Now you'll notice there that the words who won are in bold, which is what happens when Twitter is showing you the terms you searched for. And he tweeted out many of those, and who won was bolded in all of them. So he was a thirsty, desperate person following the debate. But it turned out that a Twitter poll from The Blaze isn't necessarily as methodologically rigorous approach to polling as you might think it is. Because CNN with SRS actually did a real poll, and 53% said Joe Biden won, 39% said Donald Trump won. There was a second poll by a progressive firm, Data for Progress, again doing an actual poll, not a website thing or a Twitter thing. 52% said Biden won, 41% said that they thought that Trump won. We have YouGov, 54% think Joe Biden won, 35% think Donald Trump was victorious. Those are roughly in line with each other. A narrow win for Biden, not that dissimilar from the national polling, honestly, those two numbers.
Yeah, Trump lost the debate. Any reasonable human being who's not doing all the BS. And it's tough. I think the difference between Democrats or people on the left and people on the right is people on the right are fine with being jerks and disingenuous, generally. Like that has been, that's okayed inside them. I mean, I'm talking about like political figures and media personalities. They're fine with just being disingenuous, obviously wrong jerks. That thing that bothers us when the evidence doesn't support our argument doesn't bother them. They know that it's all an act. They know it's all a charade. They know that it's all about messaging people nonstop, constantly, and reinforcing each other's BS to the point where all you've seen is the same message, so it must be true. That bothers us, and we want to back it up with actual poll, with actual evidence, and we'll tell you when something doesn't fit in with a narrative we've created. This is not that. This is Trump losing and then him desperately logging into his Twitter account with the password we found out, MAGA2020 exclamation point. Did you hear that one? Someone hacked into his account because his password was MAGA2020 exclamation point, which is a step up from the previous time he was hacked when his password was "you're fired." This guy's an idiot, but that's it. And he has exposed the vulnerability near the exhaust port, and he's just gone hard in it.
I approve of that last reference there. Yeah, you're 100% right. My God, his passwords. Now, as a demonstration of what you were just saying, that we actually care about what's true, we gave you the numbers. That's the best information we have right now, but I will add context to it. That's literally the only thing I'm here to do. The gap between Biden and Trump in that was closer than in the first debate. So it appears that Biden won, but it also appears that Trump did better relative to Biden than he did in the first debate. And if we could jump ahead to the last graphic, the Frank Luntz thing, maybe this is an explanation of potentially why. His focus group words to describe Trump include controlled, reserved, poised, con artist, surprisingly presidential. Words to describe Biden, vague, unspecific, elusive, defensive, grandfatherly. I mean, those first four were obviously about Trump. I don't understand exactly how they came away with that thought that Trump was whiny and emotional and he was spitting out conspiracy theories. But you mentioned the CNN undecided poll or panel. Nine of those chose Biden afterwards, zero Trump, and two weren't sure. So there you're seeing, by the way, that 70% of voters liked the muting of the mics too. So maybe this will help Trump a tiny little bit in comparison to a failure like the first debate, but this does not seem like the sort of result that's gonna massively swing polls in the next few days.
When I see those Frank Luntz focus group words, all I see is proof that Trump is such a failure and was such a petulant brat during the first debate that what we saw yesterday, what we saw, comparatively speaking, was controlled, reserved, and poised. He was still an idiot.
Yeah.
He still rambled. None of what he said made sense when put together. He was still flailing, but just he has lowered the bar so low that compared to the rambling wreck that he was the first time around, this was not so terrible by comparison.
Yeah, maybe. He did better, I guess, than I would have expected. His strategy of just implying tons of illegal stuff about Biden as a last, like Hail Mary, maybe that'll help a little bit. I don't know, but they've been trying to do that. We speculated yesterday about what Rudy Giuliani and the Borat movie was actually going to show. And the movie's now available. You can go see it. I'm gonna watch it probably later on tonight. But here is the actual scene that has driven so much news coverage between Rudy Giuliani and Borat's reporter.
I'm so sorry. That's horrible.
Sit. Okay.
I'm so sorry for that. Really, apologize.
The apology accepted. No problem.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you again for giving me this time. Shall we have a drink in the bedroom?
Come here. What? Hold up. There you go, my dear.
Okay.
There you go. Be good. You can give me your phone number and your address.
Should we sleep your jacket?
Okay. Oh.
Put down your crumb. She's 15. She's too old for you.
Why are you dressed?
She's my daughter. Please take me instead. Take my anus.
Don't
take my anus. Do not have her.
I'm better than him.
No, I better. My.
No, please, my front anus.
Please, I will let you enjoy my crumb in your mouth. No, I better.
I would love to.
I was in prison many years, so I have techniques with my mouth.
What's going on here? Look at this guy.
I forbid this union. Rudy, Trump will be disappointed. You are leaving hotel without golden shower.
Oh my God. Oh God, I don't know what I expected, but
about it. So the specific creepy things that were the padding on the side I think there was a little extra stretching of how long he was lying down through the editing because there's two different angles.
Multiple angles, totally.
Same shot, I think. So I don't think he was spending that much time laying down on the bed on his back. I don't think that there's anything wrong with Rudy Giuliani and a reporter who is 20, whatever. He's single. Rudy and Judy are no longer together. I was happy to find out that Rudy's ex-wife is named Judy. Rudy and Judy Giuliani. anyways, he's a single guy. You know, what happens. But I do want to point out, so I want to get your reaction to this too. Like, what did you think before I give another point?
Really fast. I mean, look, yes, I think they definitely used the multiple angles to make it seem as if he was digging around in his pants longer than he was. You can still think that situation's not exactly. Giuliani is not saying what you're saying. I'm single, I can do whatever I want. He's saying there wasn't anything. And they're taking alcohol into the bedroom and he's patting her and they're taking each other's mics off. I'm not saying that definitely means anything. And he must have been suspicious, even as gullible and as old and deranged and bat brained as he is. Like, she's very young and very beautiful and he is what he is. I don't know. I think that it gives you an impression that probably is not entirely accurate. But I don't think it's unfair to say that he wasn't asking for her phone number just because he wanted to do a follow-up about the interview or whatever.
Yes, I agree. That all makes sense. So here's the thing that no one's really talking about that is very important. As we all try to find ways, like everyone thinks this is just like fun and ridiculous, but there is something very specifically germane to Rudy Giuliani and his place in society right now that this exposes. Because Rudy Giuliani, according to people on the right, his one function is to go into former Soviet socialist republics and determine what's real and what's fake. And yeah, he was just had by Borat. The thing we know from a former Soviet socialist republic that is the most fake thing in the universe. This is Trump's cybersecurity advisor who had to go to a genius bar to get his iPhone unlocked. This is a guy who accidentally uploaded video of him saying, doing like a fake generic Asian accent that was racist. But this is the guy that's going into the Ukraine and saying like, oh, this laptop is real. And he can't tell when he's going into a room with Borat? Are you kidding me? That is what people should be shouting from the rooftops. That's why this makes so much sense to come out right now. This isn't just like Borat, Rudy, weird stuff, don't pay attention to that. This is like a rebuttal to him saying, I got the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't pay any attention to him. This is specifically that same part of the world geopolitically. And he failed at that. So no one should take anything that he does seriously.
Yeah. You know, I agree with everything you said. It kind of makes me wish that instead of going for the like sleazy angle, they had offered him like compromising information about Biden from like the Kazakh government wants to like help Donald Trump. That might have been better, I think. But yeah, look, at the end of the day, this isn't really news, except insofar as you're pointing out, he is presenting himself as a credible person and such a credible person that when he and Steve Bannon team up and produce news, that should be what the election is basically decided on. That's what he wants you to believe. And meanwhile, he's been had by the Borat guy. Like, that's,
dude.
Yeah, he's a joke. He's a joke.
I used to work with a guy that produced for Borat, and he was like, we just put up the same website for everyone, like for the Ali G, like all that stuff. He's like, he showed me the websites. There's like three of the same websites saying this is a real person, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised how all these people want so desperately to be interviewed by someone cool. Or someone who, in this case, agrees with him. They're posing as a like Tommy Lahren type person, even though she has a very thick Eastern European accent. Yeah. But they want so desperately to be on TV. That's what it's about. It's not about anything else. And they play to their egos. And this should be much more focused on Rudy Giuliani's inability to speak the truth and detect the truth versus lies when he's faced with it.
I agree. Well, anyway, there might be a little bit more to the scene. Maybe the movie is now available. You can watch it. That would be a good one to do a movie watch along. I think we could do it. Actually, I think it's one of those. Yeah. We should do that. This probably isn't really news, but there's a mystery in politics this week. What is going on with Mitch McConnell? This video from C-SPAN 2 was going around. We're gonna show you this picture. A lot of people noticed that his hand seems to have something going on. And later on, when he had to stoop to pick up his mask, you could see a little bit more and people zoomed in. And like, he's got a bandage and his hand is obviously very discolored. Now, just the 12th of October, if we go to this next image, you're gonna see his hand looking like any normal, slightly older turtle paw. Like, it just looks like it's supposed to, but now it looks very different. And it's probably just something medical, Brett, I assume. But he's been very evasive with reporters. They've asked if he's okay, if there's anything wrong, and he just says there's nothing. There's nothing. He doesn't say why it happened, why he's wearing bandages. What do you think?
There's a lot of ways to interpret this. My preferred interpretation is that somewhere in a castle is a rose, and every few years a petal falls off the rose. And when it finally falls off, he just disappears into goo. And there's only one petal left, John.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he learns how to love someone and be loved in return, he will just evaporate. And he has failed that. And it's showing physically that, like, there's just a little bit of one petal left on the rose, John. And he should have been nicer to that beautiful enchantress who appeared at his castle seeking shelter from a bitter storm.
Well, look, in his defense, the beautiful enchantress was dressed like a peasant girl.
Yeah.
And they come from very different class backgrounds. Anyway, so if he only has moments left, who is he gonna try to convince to love him? It's not gonna be the voters of Kentucky. Like, they might support him. I don't think they're in love.
There's only one Koch brother left.
That would explain,
in basically the parts of his body that are battered and bruised are the same ones that he uses to pleasure big money donors.
Oh, okay.
Because it's also his mouth and his hand.
Nope,
I'm just saying.
We're not.
Well, John, hand is hurt. This one is bruised and battered. And then
his other
hand
is
too. Have that last photo, you can see his mouth.
Let's bring up the last photo.
It's his mouth.
He's got yellowing around his eyes.
That checks out.
Okay. Well, anyway, here is what I have to assume. Like, I would, theories aside, he fell, I think.
Yeah.
And people are saying blood thinners and stuff, potentially, but he didn't bruise his face. Like, it could be some sort of blood thing. I think he just fell. And I guess maybe he doesn't want to seem frail or admit to weakness in the days before an election. That's just so stupid. Just admit that you fell. You're an older person. Older voters can probably understand that. That's a threat that they have to deal with. Just be real. He can't be real about a simple thing like taking a tumble.
Yeah, which he obviously did. The other explanation is, I don't know if other people have watched Lovecraft Country, but there is a guy who, like, doesn't he have like grafted black man skin on his body so he doesn't die? That's what he's got. He's got a very like Jordan Peele allegory situation going on that's keeping him alive.
Exactly. Yeah, it's deep. It's a good metaphor for American race relations. But anyway, get better, buddy, and then retire. Get out of here because you're stopping much needed aid to the American people. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, this was a super trashy week. The whole month, basically, you just throw the entire thing in the garbage. Mine, I found it very easy to pick. It came to me last night, and apparently Brett was feeling quite the same. So mine is going to be a Megyn Kelly. Now, why Megyn Kelly? Well, first I'm gonna feed Trashy because he has been waiting for his meal for some time. There you go, buddy. There you go. She is garbage because she has such an obvious, transparent grift that's going on. right now. You know, historically she's garbage for a lot of reasons, but here's the thing that caused her to go and trash his mouth today. She tweeted last night, Trump won this debate handily. Biden wasn't a force at all. Trump was substantive, on point, well-tempered, definitely helped himself when it mattered most. Somebody wants an interview.
Someone wants an internship. Somebody. Like, that's how sad it is. It's like, I'll do anything, I'll take out the trash. So the full backstory on the garbage people today was I sent my graphics in to Sophie, Norma, and Marissa. And the response was too late. John already took it. So this is going to be my original garbage person. She has been on the, she tucked tail and went to MSNBC or NBC. Got a huge contract because that's NBC's jam right now. It worked out for Nicole Wallace. It did not work out for Megyn Kelly. So Megyn Kelly is licking toilets. And that's the only thing that I can describe it as. She is down there licking toilets to get back in the good graces of Fox News type fans.
Yeah, and look, I get it. If you had this huge, you know, contract or whatever, and then you lost it, you want to get that back. There's gotta be a different way. Like there's a lot of bootlickers in media. But for Trump, considering your history with him, like it's so pathetic and see-through. The grift is so clear. There was a great response to her tweet by Patricia Arquette who said, "Do you have windmill cancer? I'm getting concerned." To which she responded, "Nah, just don't suffer from Trump derangement syndrome and can still engage in fair analysis. You wouldn't understand." Which is, by the way, that's the last bit of the grift. The grift is saying what you need to say to get paid. The final part of the grift is saying that that's actually evidence that you're the one with the integrity after all. No, you're not. You want an interview with him or a show or to be hired back to Fox or something like that. That's what you want. And the reason I say that isn't just because what debate were you watching? You're saying objectively he definitely helped himself. Like, oh, the poll showed that he didn't win. Like, you could have waited 5 minutes to find out that your take was not only self-serving and grifty, but it's also clearly wrong. And so to present yourself as the only one who's being fair, that everyone else, including the polls, have some sort of Trump derangement syndrome is just pathetic.
I couldn't help myself on this too, John, because I spent some time kicking around in her other tweets, just like you did. And good God, here is a video that we pulled of Megyn Kelly explaining the obstacle course you need to go through in order to download her podcast. And then her bragging about who she interviewed and the cool stories they're telling.
Hey guys, it's me, Megyn Kelly, and we've got a good show for you that we're going to post tomorrow morning with Senator Ted Cruz. You're going to like it. You got to go to your podcast, search Megyn Kelly. I'll pop up, download, subscribe, and ideally rate it with 5 stars. But listen to Ted Cruz tell you about Chris Wallace and his new proposal for fair debates, whether he thinks Trump is going to win, and that time he watched porn with Sandra Day O'Connor. Check it out. There's a link right here. See ya.
There's a link right here.
Oh, how would the 50 have fallen?
It's so sad. It's so sad. And what makes it, I feel like this is the week that she's done with her NBC contract. Like, there's only so, like, she was on contract, she got fired, but they have to pay her out. So sad.
Yeah. Getting in the garbage can isn't necessarily always a measure of being the most objectively horrible. That generally just gets you coverage on the show. Being this pathetic and self-serving, and being willing to like imply that Trump spending an hour and a half just shouting conspiracy theories that he's heard on Fox News is well-mannered and presidential and should help him. Like, you are saying everyone should like support this, that like people do support this. This is a good thing. It's not something that a reporter or someone who claims to be a reporter should have a problem with. And you're doing all of that to get paid. That is pathetic. And Trashy will enjoy his meal this week. What about you, Brett?
Mine is a guy running for Congress. His name's Madison Cawthorn. I mean, he looks like an auto-generated Hitler youthy type, but he's also got the history to back it up. He is running for Congress, and he apparently put up a website to attack his opponent. He's attacking this guy, Tom Fielder, who works for Mo Davis. Tom Fielder, who works with Mo Davis's advocates, is working to tear down Madison Cawthorn. He quit his academia job in Boston to work for non-white males like Cory Booker, who aims to ruin white males running for office.
Wait, what? Where is that?
This is on motaxes.com, an attack site put up reportedly by the Madison Cawthorn campaign to attack someone who works for his opponent, saying the big attack line that this guy is working for non-white males. Can you believe it? This is a guy running for Congress. We're going to do a pool during our election coverage. We're all the hosts, and we'll have a place for you to download it and play along with yourself, play with us, where you can fill out who you think's going to, you know, win the congressional majority and all that stuff. But there's also prop bets, like how many QAnon Congress people will be in Congress. This is Madison Cawthorn, who has a past for stuff like this. So as Mediaite reports, based on a statement by his opponent, revelations about Madison Cawthorn's blatantly racist comment come days after 150 former classmates at Patrick Henry College, more than half the entire student body during his time there, signed a letter and posted it online calling Mr. Cawthorn a sexual predator who lied and vandalized property while attending the college for a little over a semester in 2016 to 2017. And according to the statement, the former classmates are now urging voters not to support his candidacy, and all of that follows earlier criticism of Matt about Madison Cawthorn's bucket list visit to Adolf Hitler's Eagle's Nest, where he reverentially referred to Hitler as the Führer, a pretty much seemingly literal Nazi type running for Congress and trying to attack his opponent by saying one of the people that's helping him had the audacity to work for non-white males. Insanity.
You win this week. That is more garbagey. Wow, I had not seen that. How do you convince more than half of your classmates to like make an electoral thing out of how awful you are after one semester at a college? How? I didn't have a reputation after like 5 years at UConn. He got it in like a week and a half. Everyone's like, oh no, I heard about that guy. He's the worst. Literally don't go near him.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, that was amazing. So those are our garbage people, but what about the Dragon Squad? 5,600 of you voted at the community tab of our YouTube channel. And here is how the top five did. At 3%, Jeffrey Toobin, for you know why. 5% gave it to David Perdue for repeatedly mispronouncing Kamala Harris's name. A tie with 17% going to Dianne Feinstein for a complete lack of leadership with regard to Amy Coney Barrett and Rudy Giuliani for being dumb enough to fall for Borat. And then 58% first place for Trump for many things, but specifically this week for attacking Fauci. Trump got it. Thank you to everybody who voted. That's the garbage. Trashy's gonna munch on that over the course of the weekend. Ugh. But anyway, Brett, thank you so much. I know Happy Half Hour is coming up a little bit later on with you and Mark Thompson. Sounds like fun.
It will be. Thank you all for joining us, joining me, joining John. I love you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.